This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to Disruptive CEO Nation, where company founders, entrepreneurs, and cutting-edge thinkers drop in from around the globe to share startup stories, insider insights, and hard-earned success lessons. Now, here's your host, a woman who mastered business by placing heels on the ground all over the world, having worked with and coached CEOs and senior leaders from over 90 countries, and who wants you to build your best business future, Allison K. Summers.
Well, hey, everyone. Thank you for dropping in. We're so glad that you are joining us. I have a wonderful person that you need to meet. And just think, if you could change your path and trajectory as a founder from moving the needle on fundraising, particularly as a female founder, from, say, 2%, not to 10%, not to 20%, but even further, maybe even as far as 70%. Well, we have a wonderful guest that is going to tell us all about this wonderful ecosystem that they have set up and a community that can truly help you with business results. So I want to welcome to the program Andrea Summer, who is the co-founder and CEO of Hive Founders.
Thank you, Andrea, so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Tell us all the beautiful things that you are currently doing in the world.
So Hive Founders is really a network for female founders globally. We're headquartered in the UK, and we have a presence in Amsterdam, in Helsinki, in Israel, and also here in the US, where I'm based. We support women globally, and our mission is to help women launch, fund, and scale more successfully, with a huge emphasis on funding, because that's where most businesses die, is the lack of access to capital. And so our whole mission is really designed to help women access capital more efficiently, and also to help them build more robust businesses, which in turn raise capital more easily.
I love it. I love it so, so much. Let's take a roll back. How did this initiative start? I mean, you just gave this wonderful summary of all these locations that you are in the world. You know, what a global network this is. But every good initiative starts someplace.
Yeah, so Hive Founders started when I was building my first business back in 2015. I was going to a lot of different fundraising events. I was living in London at the time. And I kept running into the same woman at different pitch events. And it was very memorable because she was the only other woman in the room. There were no women investors. There were no other female founders. And we went for a glass of wine one day and got to talking and realized we had really common background. Hers more in finance, mine more in consulting, but we had gone to the same business school in different years. And we were similarly also struggling to fundraise successfully. So we decided to take a really collaborative approach to this process and created this little support group, which initially was 10 women in a room with croissants and coffee, throwing problems at each other, problem solving, and just supporting ourselves as we tried to fundraise successfully. And then 6 years later, here we are. We have about 2,000 members globally, and we do a lot of the same principles around support and around fundraising advice. And we take a lot of the lived experience that we had in fundraising to create a playbook for investment that is really, really helpful for women.
Before we go further, I just want to toss out, if you're near a computer, take a look at hivefounders.net, and you can follow along and see some of what we're talking about. But yeah, I'm very interested in this, you know, your investment playbook. And I love how you know, it's this collective experience, because I know when you go to the website, you know, you have this motto of, you know, become a better entrepreneur together. So give us a little bit of background on this investment playbook and how you are helping individuals move the needle and the chances from, say, only the average statistic of a 2% investment to so, so much higher.
Yeah, so our approach is really around robustness. So women this will come as no surprise to pretty much any woman who's either worked in corporate or been an entrepreneur. We get much more severely dinged for robustness across everything. So we have to be 10 times better and 10 times stronger. And our approach is really to help women build better so that their chances are also stronger of raising capital. The way we do this is we really take a really, really deep look into the business. We open every drawer, look behind every curtain, and we help find any problem area and resolve that through our network of advisors that we've built, through relationships that we've had, and also through our own lived experience as business women to help make that business stronger and more capable of accessing capital. And then we go on top of that and we teach women the exact process of fundraising successfully, because a lot of the advice that's out there is really geared towards young men primarily and not for women. And we just raise differently. So we help women understand that the fundraising process is actually a sales process that needs to be managed very actively, rather than waiting for the process to happen for yourself. And so by teaching women to take more control of what happens in the room when they're in an investor conversation, we help them have more successful outcomes.
I love the phrase "take more control of the room." I think that is really great. I mean, none of us are born naturally to know how to pitch. We're not born naturally to know how to do anything. But I think we need to put down our sense of self-preservation and say, "Help me, let me learn from you." I want to skip back to this concept of your four-time founder. We like to talk about like naked truths, you know, hard-earned lessons on this program, either in your own experience or in this lovely cohort that you've built. What are some of the common stumbling blocks that you do see founders encountering?
The biggest stumbling block that I always see is the financials. So financials are not only something that is really intimidating for women for some reason, but also something that is pretty much the first thing that investors ask about. And therefore, because of the combination of feeling uncomfortable with it and knowing that it's coming up in the investment process, it makes it really, really scary for women. But actually, having a really good financial plan for your business is really, really key to knowing if this is a viable business at all. And so my goal, my mission is to make women more comfortable with numbers so that they can really, they're the experts in their business and they really need to be able to comfortably describe and defend the logic of their businesses through numbers, which is the language of investors. And by connecting those two sides is where we find this to be really, really beneficial for women.
And you would you say that's there's a commonality globally on on that point?
Absolutely. Funding, like financial modeling is the scariest part for women, no matter what culture they come from. Even more experienced founders are still really intimidated. And even sometimes fintech founders, which I find really surprising, because if you are operating in a financial services space, you'd think that you'd be really, really comfortable talking about and describing numbers. But actually, when it comes to speaking the language of investors, it's really uncomfortable for the vast majority of women. I don't know if that's true for men as well, because I don't tend to work with men very often. But for women, it's certainly something that is really scary.
Yeah, I'm going to jump to another topic, which is, you know, like personal brand management and why learning public relations and learning how to present yourself in all different ways is important. I mean, you have done it very well. You've been featured in the Financial Times, Forbes, Medium, Thrive, MBA entrepreneur, startup mom. Like, you know, you've got this down. But what tips and advice do you have for other female founders when it comes to throwing your hat in the PR ring?
Well, I think fundraising, the most important thing to learn, and one of the things that we always talk about is that fundraising is a performance, right? It is a show. And it's a show that you have to use to convince investors that what you're building is something really exciting and that they should come along in that exciting journey with you. So for me, it's really, really important for founders to understand that while being out there and talking to people and being having your face and voice out there can be something a little bit intimidating and maybe uncomfortable. It's a requirement for doing fundraising successfully. And I also think it's a requirement for building a successful business. You, as the leader of that business, you're the face and voice of the business. And so it's really important to get comfortable with that process and really find the vo a voice that you can authentically display that both resonates your authentic self, but also resonates the goals and mission of the business.
So let's talk about the type of founders that you attract at Hive. Do you have like a higher percentage of tech founders, femtech? Is there a specific type of founder that seems to be attracted to your community?
We work with founders of all kinds, and we do that on purpose. So I myself am the kind of person that is interested in a lot of different things. I've built four very, very different businesses, one in HR tech, a femtech business, an analytics business, and now I run this business. And we try to bring that kind of diversity of perspectives into Hive and everything that we do. And we really believe very, very strongly that good ideas can come from anywhere, and that you can borrow good ideas from anywhere. So it's really, really important for us to not specialize too much and to be really kind of the essence of an entrepreneur, which is a generalist, right? We are all the best entrepreneurs are generalists, in my opinion, and good at doing lots of different kinds of things. And so we really try to internalize that generalist approach in everything that we do, not just in the work that we do at Hive, but also in how we think about our investments through our sister organization. Really, diversity of thinking and diversity of perspectives is super, super important for us.
I want to talk about this concept of borrowing ideas from different places. And I love the concept of being a generalist, that you can be a really successful entrepreneur being a generalist. What are some of the great ideas that you think you discovered along your entrepreneurial journey that helped accelerate your personal businesses?
I think that my approach has been to learn from across all kinds of organizations. So I started my career in enterprise, and I learned a lot of the ways that big businesses operate, some of the things good, some of the things bad. And I applied some of that discipline to my entrepreneurial style, which I think is a little bit unusual. Sometimes people think entrepreneurship is really chaotic and is a little bit of controlled chaos, and it's absolutely controlled chaos. But I think there's a real level of discipline that's re required in order to be successful at entrepreneurship. So for me, that balance of understanding how to navigate uncertainty comfortably, understanding how to navigate the kind of controlled chaos in a really disciplined, self-motivated way is really, really important. And I think those are lessons that I learned from like my corporate life that I've applied into my entrepreneurial life. But I learn every time I have a conversation with a founder, I learn something new, whether it's a new industry, a new legislation that's coming up, a new way of doing things. I learn something new, and that's why I love my job. I feel like it's the best job in the world because I get to spend my whole time talking to interesting women, solving interesting problems. And so I think it's really important to think about and borrow best practices where you can, apply them to your life, apply them to your business, change them so that they make sense for you, and then go forth.
So at Disruptive CEO Nation, we absolutely love people who are solving interesting problems. And I know it's really difficult to want to just talk about one or two or three of these wonderful, magnificent founders that you're working with. But can you share with us an example of something that has gone through the accelerator program that's part of your community that you're like, hey, Allison, your listeners should maybe go take a look at this.
It's really hard to
It
pick one.
is
You're
really
right.
hard.
I'll share just a few examples. I'll share one example from a recent cohort, which is a business called Justify, which is looking at the sustainability of prod at a product level. So what they do is they are able to analyze and provide recommendations in just a couple of minutes to organizations on how they can become more sustainable. In advance of new European directives that are coming up that are making it a requirement. So organizations can save a lot of money by becoming more sustainable, which I think is a really brilliant way of doing it. In the past, we also worked in a previous cohort. I worked with a founder who I absolutely love, and she's taking food waste, so food from the manufacturing processes like bread butts or fruit peels, and she's turning them into delicious, healthy snacks, and increasing their value by over 130 times, which is, I think, absolutely incredible. So you're both solving the problem of reducing food waste, but also turning it into highly consumed, delicious, healthy products. I've worked with a founding team that I also absolutely loved, really building a very advanced B2B technology for VIP events to make the event management process really, really seamless, which I really loved because my first business was in the event space and I firsthand experienced the challenge of raising and of hosting an event. And then I'll just mention one more that I really, really love. It's a smartphone case that's designed to detect drink spiking drugs in a beverage in situ. So if you're at a bar and you're like, want to see what whether there's any drugs in my drink, I can just use my phone case and it automatically detects it. And if there's something in there that's you shouldn't be taking, it'll let you know and you can stop yourself from being drugged. So all kinds of different things, as you can see. I'm very interested in all kinds of different things, but the theme for me is just interesting problems being solved.
So that makes me go to somebody like yourself, who I always say to my listeners, my guests are people that you want in your professional network. You want to find them on LinkedIn. You want to follow them. You're in a unique seat because you're exposed to so many different industries, so many different trends, that you have to have an edge of being a futurist in yourself and in your DNA. So what are some of those business trends, economic trends, or governmental control trends that maybe you've all been talking about or you're starting to hear people talk about more?
I think one of the things that for me is really becoming a business imperative is thinking about sustainability as a performance improvement. So it used to be that you would look at ESG, for example, as kind of like a tick box exercise where you would say, hey, we have a green plan, or we're greenwashing this or that. And I think things have really shifted. I think legislation is shifting. In Europe in particular, there's new legislation coming up that is re that by 2030 is going to require every business to have a sustainability plan and a plan for lowering their sustainability footprint. And I think that's really important. And I really see that across a lot of different kinds of organizations. It's not just in Europe. California's also has legislation that's really similar. And so I think the world is changing. People's eyes are opening up, and investors' eyes are also opening up to the fact that there is huge performance gains from being more efficient, from becoming more efficient. And I think some of these approaches are really designed to do that. And the kinds of businesses that we work with are trying to solve some of the problems associated with those transitions.
So I want to flip and talk more about you and your experience, because you are clearly, our audience can tell, a very energetic person on a mission on lots of different ways. So give us an idea of some of the things that you are currently working on pursuing, whether business or hobby, outside of Hive.
Outside of Hive, a lot of my time is dedicated to Hive, and then to my family, my daughter. I have a daughter, and I always joke with her. She's 5 years old. That I'm my life's mission is to make the world better for her. So a lot of what I do and a lot of the energy that I spend is around trying to figure out ways to make the world better. And I think that that's what my life's mission is all about. Outside of life, I really am a very avid reader. I like to read all kinds of books. I primarily like to read science fiction books too, and perhaps that's because I'm someone who's always looking at the future, and I want fiction to inspire possibilities for fact. So I love to really read about new worlds and new approaches and new ways of thinking, and love in particular to see those things come into reality and become real products faster than we think. So that's really what I do. I read a lot, I work a lot, I spend time with my family.
No, that's all very fabulous, because a lot of times, I'm always amazed at entrepreneurs and business builders who are doing it with small children at home. I mean, I've raised three kids and it's not easy, right? A lot of other people will drop out. And I think when you are in the space of encouraging female founders, and I'm always in a place where I'm encouraging female business builders, right? It's hard. You feel like things are stacked against you, or different things might cause me to step out, or or drop away, and you just have to say, give up that edge of perfectionism or that edge of what you think should be. I once had a role model, like female business mentor, and she was like on the global stage, big business, who was like, you only have so much magic fairy dust. And also realize that, you don't have to give 110% because your 80% is equivalent to an average person's 150%. So, give yourself some grace. So I guess I want to kind of, as we start to close, ask you what's some of the best business advice that you've been given that you feel has really been foundational or helpful for you?
There is one thing that really, really was very transformative for my life. This was way back when I still worked in the corporate world, and my mentor told me, recommended this book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, which I read very, very quickly. But the approach that she said, that she suggested, is this idea of re recognizing that anxiety and excitement feel physiologically exactly the same. And so when you're going into a new situation, you get that buzzy feeling of like, oh, I'm feeling so nervous about this. Actually, if you tell yourself, I'm actually really excited about this, you just feel excited. And so for me, it's been really, really transformative. It's enabled me to jump into new opportunities, to try to be a trailblazer all the time, every day, and to really not be scared of things that are uncomfortable or unknown. Because the reality is that it's okay to feel a little bit uncomfortable and a little bit afraid, but you need to do th those things anyway. So that's the biggest advice that I got, and I really internalize it, and I apply that, and I share that with my daughter, and also with the women I work with very regularly.
Well, I appreciate that. Okay, Andrea, a lot of people listen. This might not be for them, but they might know somebody who needs to find their way to Hive. So where should they go? What should they do? How can they find out more?
Best way to find us is on our website, which is hivefounders.net. We're also on LinkedIn. Happy to connect with folks on LinkedIn if they want to find me personally. And yeah, we're on Twitter and Instagram, but not super, super active. So LinkedIn and our website is the best way to find it, to get in touch with us.
Well, thank you for dropping in and sharing your story with us and telling us about your corner of the world. We really do appreciate it and we wish you well. And I can't wait to just watch and see how much you all continue to grow.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Hey, to our audience, if there is a wonderful, disruptive CEO, founder, business leader that you think we need to speak with, send us a note at connect@alisonksummers.com. Until we speak again, keep your eye on the future and always be disruptive. Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you.
49 faces looked to him in triumph. Over the last 12 months, they had each taken turns and promoted his business for a week at a time, driving over $987,342 in revenue. What if you had a network of 50 centers of influence who promoted your business every week for a year? Grab your copy of the number one Amazon best-selling book, The Ultimate Guide to Growing Your Business with a Podcast, at 33% off the Amazon price by going to ultimatepodcastbook.com. Again, that website for 33% off the Amazon price is ultimatepodcastbook.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.